2248C, it was amended in the Senate. The House did not concur with the Senate amendment, and it's back there to decide two things. One, what will you do about the Senate amendment? And secondly, there are some proposed new amendments to the bill for your consideration. All but two of those, I believe, have been distributed to the committee.
Maybe we could have Pat explain what the amendments were that were made in the Senate.
The amendment in the Senate deleted the prohibition on a health care facility. Be one of the activities that can qualify for the benefits of this program. There's a list of services that don't count. Primarily, these are services that are in the retail sector as opposed to serving under manufacturers or wholesalers or not in the retail business. But among those that are disqualified are retail sales or services, healthcare, housing, retail food service, healthcare, and tourism. What the Senate amendment did was took the healthcare prohibition out, so they're no longer excluded. And then it made provisions under conditions by which a health care provider could receive the benefits of the program.
Good to hear. Thank you. I wonder, could you also characterize what happened in the House, opposition, what was the nature of the opposition to the Senate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordon.
I think in terms of the House is concerned about the Senate amendment because it applies to them to the person as a retroactive step. I'm not mistaken, it's about $4 million under the different deals of the state, and that the AFAC grounds are no longer in existence in the Northern Security using as retroactive.
$4 million of the cost of the value, not the cost
of the money. So, okay.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I have a little hard time hearing down here, but I just want to clarify that. It was retroactive, and it was for one individual, and it reduced their property value $4 million. Is that what I understand you're saying?
$4 million,
Mr. Chairman, that's not what Enterprise Zone is for. That's not what they were intended for, and it sure should be excluded. I couldn't agree with you not concurring more.
You didn't intend to go on to the location, but the way it could be applied to many of the healthcare industries, we suspect that we are victimized away from the major cities, and the population is not more than, and so that was one of the conditions we did not receive the money from the person.
What was the nature of the facility that was in question in terms of that we not concurred on? I believe it was healthcare related.
There has been a patient in a particular area and so this is Dr. Cox.
Mr. Chairman, Can I ask a follow-up question on this letter from the city of Astoria? How many kidney patients are there in Clapper County that this will be treating?
Actually, I don't have any clean knowledge of it. So maybe I have a question, but I can actually talk to you.
Okay, but it's pretty important. We don't know how many there are. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The film really approached the enterprise zone here, hotels and motels allow both the owner of the enterprise zone. And I think that the chair seems to be very important to get very low end of it.
I think one of the problems here is that the enterprise zone in Australia is no longer
visible.
So,
thank you very much. I also have in front of me now the letter from Mayor, I think it's Van Dusen.
Yes.
And because we are talking about the nature of the medical facility, or at least that's one of the issues that's surfaced thus far, I just want to make sure that we put on record exactly what kind of facility we're talking about, according to the mayor of the city of Astoria. And he describes the facility as Prosper Park's multi-million-dollar medical center will provide dialysis for kidney patients who might otherwise be unable to reach Portland for treatment. Dr. Park also will provide oncology medicine and other specialties that have been unavailable in Clatsop County. Dr. Park's project will provide more than 60 permanent family-wage jobs in our community. So, well, Mr. Chair, we don't know exactly how many patients, and that is a question that's come up, are being treated. We do have some other information, some other facts, and then provided to us by the mayor of the city of Astoria to consider.
I just have a comment and a question. Comment is that there's a reason that they stay away from retail provision services and enterprise zones, and it's a healthy reason. You could imagine a scenario of, the dialysis unit from Sacred Heart Hospital is set up, Sacred Heart sit around, and San Bernardino down. You could imagine Kendrew Lamar Hospital, for instance, and San Diego, and you have basically catastrophic, very competitive environment, it's pretty dangerous. Now for the real deal, the real question I have, Mr. Chair, is that instead of dancing around this issue, I'd like to just put it on the table. What are the chances of this bill moving forward? We have some amendments to look at, some additional amendments to look at. What are the chances of this bill moving forward, the passage on the House floor with the current amendments in there?
I think we will get out of this topic today. I think in the Senate, I guess, those candidates present, they won't vote for the bill. And by the fact that the Senate is, I think we have a good chance in the House that the bill that is, that is also the Congress Committee to make a final judgment. I believe, Mr. Chair, that this additional amendment, I believe, is a reasonable and good compromise. If there is no compromise, only a Senate way, only a House way, I don't think it's going to work. I think it's a good, prudent, and moderate approach, making sure that we don't get it automatically, but the local option is important.
Just interested in your statement that the measure is going to get out of committee. Is that based on a vote count that you've already taken, or I'm just trying to figure out why I'm here?
The Congress Committee of the Senate takes 2 days on both sides to move forward, and our options are that the House can accept the Senate amendment to the previous event. The House should accept the additional amendment, the House should accept the same amendment as the additional amendment. The Senate could proceed in the amendment, the Senate could proceed in the amendment and the additional amendment, so we can agree not to send any conclusions and ask an additional question to be reappointed when we come back and try again, or we can try again.
Yeah, I appreciate Freeman's options laid out. It just seems like that it wasn't going
to move out of time. And I agree, yes. And I wanted to clarify. To report with the Senate President of the State just today, that wouldn't be a retroactive action.
I don't know if he's available. like you hear of it today. And one way I have discussed with my staff and members and many others the options and the possibility we can look it up. One option is C-19, the other option. If any instead of not only local option, we give them only December 31st. That's also one option I have there. And the last option I have in mind, instead of we discuss here, we can be persuaded and made. And since there's some final producer list, maybe we can use to discuss that, and then also there's a way to move up. You heard of this.
I remember the three different options. It was a good way to move. Officially, if not, from anywhere else. I would disagree with the Senate President and the Secretary of Means that there's nothing in the rules that allows us to send this measure from the Conference Committee to raise the means. I would suggest that it's not one of our options from the Conference Committee. So your options are limited. You have to go inside the city, you have to go out of the means to have the language in it. We'll try to see you. I wish you had your efforts, but I think this should be the vehicle for it.
Okay. I just provided you some of the options.
So the chair moves to send this evening amendments, created the 10 minutes. Minister has been dated June 17, 1999. Question?
Yes,
what was that?
I'm sorry.
It is moved that the Senate received an amendment to House Committee 48C as dated June 17, 1999.
Mr. Chairman, amendment coming? I'll be supporting your motion. This is giving a special tax break to somebody. We've done that in the past, but it should be a special bill. You should not be using the enterprise system for this, enterprise zone system for this type of tax break. I can appreciate the need in that story. We have it throughout Eastern Oregon also, and we're used to driving when we got to get there. There's no other way to get there. So I don't have any problem supporting that, and please do not abuse the enterprise zone system. It's so important to the future of Oregon. It's been around 10 to 15, 20 years, and it seems to work pretty good so far, so why are we messing with it? Thank you.
Not unusual to make a phone call at the time when we have a patient need a break, so there's a sure sheet to actually do that. And so I have studied in the engineering center to do that because this is something unusual. Whenever a patient need it could be done. We hope the rules should be there for everyone, but sometimes the time when there's a real need, this is something unusual to be able to support. So on that basis, that we can support.
Based on the unmitigated bonehead insistence of the House members that they're not going to budge on the intransigence and contractual is the word I was looking for, I'll support your motion simply to get this thing moving because, you know, I'm trying to weigh the two. The bill is more important than taking care of everybody in this particular bill. I think it's very important for rural Oregon, so important for Kim Renstrie and some other folks to have initiatives in this area, so I'll support the motion.
Mr. Chair, I find myself unable to support the motion. I believe that the information that is before us, in written form, at least from the mayor of the city of Astoria, is compelling information, and I wish that we had time to hear more from the mayor and others who are most familiar with what the health care needs are in this particular community. I do have some familiarity with dialysis, given that a member of my family died as a result of that illness, and the treatment was readily available. And so when I think about kidney patients and their need for access to quality health care, and the possibility that we have people who have to travel a distance to get the quality of health care, I find that troubling. Some might call that a sidebar issue, given all that is some might call that a sidebar issue given the whole of the issues in front of us, but I think access to health care in our state and evening out that access is one of our responsibilities as legislators, so I'm focusing on that piece.
for discussion? Heading to Chief Caldwell.
Aye.
President Gordon?
Aye.
President
Gordon?
No.
Senator
Mann?
No.
President
McCormick? Aye.
President
Gordon? Aye. The motion fails for not sufficient hearing on two sides of the chamber.
I will make an amendment coming from the representative chair, and I move that the application for the C-19 be adapted to the application for the amendment about the local option C and how it must approve it in the year. Even if it's here, okay? No action at all, that is the context of the United States at all.
Knowing what the law was, is that correct?
I didn't go
to the right point. So at this point, Mr. Chairman, I didn't come to Salem to do retroactivity law on things that people knew in advance. I'm very proud to serve in this body. But something like this kind of hurts my pride a little bit, so I obviously can't support this. This is stuff. And if it was so important, where the legislators from the district come in and testify because of the great need. The building was started knowing what was happening. The gentleman can't afford it, so now he wants to take off him, and I'm not there. I'm a no.
Every corner of our state will have that creative importance. I don't want this has just finished the back of one member. That the mayor there mentioned how many gaps. It's a 50 corners of families in the gaps. One gap is important in that area, especially rural or some other areas where that we have some of the areas unemployment is obligated. And we have an obligation to the same idea. It's not just one person, one healthcare facility.
If you need more jobs, you're coming to get them up to time for it. Sir, I just don't understand in terms of how a retroactive tax break is going to secure the financial well-being of the $50 million medical plan. In terms of if you have problems today, in terms of how those one-time tax break going to ensure the success in the future.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this tax break will be in the future. And we have to actually certify it to the program. And enterprise loan that we have to break is both national 2 years, it could be 3 to 5 years. You can have to come in tax break only at the beginning, and at the early stage, they might be able to provide with this tax break, and after 2 years, it's full tax break.
Okay, and maybe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the enterprise loan is not existing anymore, so therefore, how can
Mr. Chairman Hill, members of the Conference Committee, my name is Art Fish, Enterprise Zone Coordinator with the Oregon Economic Development Department. The question is on target in the sense that, you know, the exemption would not, even if the zone existed, would not begin until next year under any circumstances because the building has only been finished or was finished recently. The retroactivity is a product of the fact that the zone is terminated. The local sponsors did not reapply in 1998, and so there's no administrative mechanism to sort of approve the pre-certification, subject to a change in the law. That's the company that applied beforehand.
I just one question. I'm just kind of pushing my recollection of my knowledge of enterprise zones for precedence of a retroactive provision such as this nature. Does one come to mind for you? Where we have passed similar types of legislation during the special cases.
Listeners, Decker Show held members of the Conference Committee. None comes to mind in the time I've been here with the agency and dealt with three sessions with the enterprise zone bills. There have been clauses that had a retroactive effect for matters of legal or technical certainty, but they had no particular objection in mind. However, before 1995, I believe there were laws that the legislature passed. After a certain situation arose and they had a certain carryback to potential exemptions that might have existed. But I know we accepted that sort of rude recognition, I'm not sure.
Further discussion?
somebody. We're talking about $4 million retroactive rate. Is that per year? Is that for total? Number one question, and follow that up. The tax rate is probably $15 a thousand. So $4 million means we're anticipating $60,000 or $600,000, $60,000 is what we call $60,000. So we're asking, Mr. Chairman, if I may make a statement or a question, just write this guy a $60,000 check and then write it off. And so what we might as well just done with the means, write him a $60,000 check, and then we'd have this all taken care of.
I think $60,000 is a lot of money, but if it's a fully employed family guy, I think that it's very low. I think 60 is a full-time job. They can be quite afford $60,000 in the tax return that is being taxed, and plus helping their family fully, which is there, $60,000 or 60 grand. There, I need to put it in there.
Senator Lynn, I believe the issue in Archbishop's book that there is not an enterprise zone in which to get a tax rate even if you pass this legislation. So there would not be anyone to the tax base, if I understand that correctly.
Mr. Chairman, to all members of the Conference Committee, when the zone terminates, there might be a variety of exemptions for companies that, you know, were processed or in the process of getting an exemption. Those exemptions might continue for several years after the zone is terminated. But that's not unusual in itself. This is an issue of the company was denied pre-certification before the zone terminated, and there's no way to change that administratively within the zone.
How long would the
tax break continue for? The exemption case would be for 3 years, so you're looking at 2001, 2002.
Okay. $140,000
per year? Roughly. I think it's based on Mr. Montgomery's calculation of $15 per thousand and $60,000 per year, and it is assessed at $4 million. That value might change. You're looking at something about $150,000 to $200,000 for the 3 year period. Yeah.
And Mr. Fish, the denial was on what basis?
Chairman Hill, Senator Gordy, members of the Conference Committee. The denial of the pre-certification was based on recognition that the law prohibited or made ineligible health care facilities. And that was a point of misunderstanding for the business in question. It was denied on that basis, and the appeal was denied before the magistrate decision on it.
Thank you.
If I may follow up on that, Senator Gordy, have you denied any other medical facilities in your recollection in the state of Oregon in the past, in any place in the state, like Cascade Lodge or Burns or Lakeview or Astoria?
Senator Hill, Representative Montgomery, members of the committee, I don't personally deny anybody pre-certification, but the local officials that handle that, I'm sure,
are you aware of any?
Oh, yeah. I've talked to such companies on the phone and given them the bad news, so it's not. In this case, the pre-certification was formally submitted and was pursued even in the court.
So, Mr. Chairman, a little follow-up. So if we retroactive this room, we may have a whole bunch standing out there waiting.
May I ask that somebody, we're talking about $4 million retroactive rate. Is that per year? Is that for total? Number one question, and follow that up. The tax rate is probably $15 a thousand. So $4 million means we're anticipating $60,000 or $600,000, $60,000 is what we call $60,000. So we're asking, Mr. Chairman, if I may make a statement or written on the question, is to write this guy a $60,000 check and then write it off. And so we might as well just go on the way to me, write him a $60,000 check, and then we'd have this all taken care of.
I think $60,000 is a lot of money, but if you take a fully employed family job, I think that considering those taxes, I think 60 is a full-time job, they can become more than $60,000 in the tax return that is being taxed, and plus helping your family fully, which is there, $50,000 or 60 jobs. There, I need to put this in there.
Senator, I believe the issue in Archbishop's book that there is not an enterprise zone in which the U.S. tax rate, even if you pass this legislation. So there would not be anyone to give a tax rate. Did I understand that correctly?
Chairman Hill, members of the Conference Committee, when the zone terminates, there might be a variety of exemptions for companies that, you know, were processed or in the process of getting an exemption, and those exemptions might continue for several years after the zone is terminated. So that's not unusual in itself. This is an issue of the company was denied pre-certification before the zone terminated, and there's no way to, you know, change that inside administratively within the zone.
Wallington, what's the tax break continue for?
Chairman Hill, members of the Conference Committee, the exemption in this case would be for 3 years, so you're looking at 2001, 2002.
Okay. $240,000.
Roughly. Under, I think it's based on Mr. Montgomery's calculation of $15 per thousand and $60,000 per year, and it is assessed at $4 million, you know, that value might change. You're looking at something about $150,000 to $200,000 for the 3 year period, yeah.
And Mr. Fish, the denial was on what basis?
Chairman Hill, and the members of the Conference Committee, the denial of the pre-certification was based on the recognition that the law prohibited or made ineligible healthcare facilities. And that was a point of misunderstanding for the businessman in question. But it was denied on the basis, and the appeal was denied before the magistrate decision on here.
If I may follow up on that, Senator Gorley, have you denied any other medical facilities in your recollection in the state of Oregon in the past, in any place in the state, like Cascade Lodge or Burns or Lakeview or Astoria?
Chairman Hill, Representative Montgomery, members of the committee, I don't personally deny anybody pre-certification, but the local officials that handle that, I'm sure, have had...
Are you aware of any?
Oh, yeah. I've talked to such companies on the phone and given them the bad news, so it's not... But in this case, the pre-certification was formally submitted and was pursued even in the court.
So, Mr. Chairman, a little follow-up. So, if we retroactive this one, we may have a whole bunch standing out there waiting to go on in line, getting on.
Sure. The other thing that makes me nervous is the measure 50 from Tacoma's application for 98.7.
Chairman Hill, Senator Clark, members of the committee, Measure 50 wouldn't have an effect. It would just end when the exemption began. And so, pre-certification before a certain date couldn't change the exemption for the company. It would in theory affect what would have been the effect on the taxes.
Right, but if you go from a levy to a rate base, it was during that same period of transition, and you could have an impact on who pays in terms of the pool for property tax. That was the only concern I had.
Well, again, we're not going back. HB 2248-C would not go back in terms of any exemption for Measure 50. The exemption would never have begun until 2000 at the earliest. And retroactively, there's no other company out there from those right that you that puts me in a position to use.
I'd like to have a
that's a carbon limitation to some of the 1999 to have what yet. The other people this time is the additional and but I will investigate the same question and the other.
Mr. Chairman, I do have an explanation that this is more of the same when the word different. Retroactive and $4 million.
Great. You must be afraid of anything you've described.
This is the same amount that I'm saying that the resolution of the government body of the Trump has not made a grant to come up with a personalized member. So they must, the reason must happen this year, and then if it's not happening, then they can have it. So it's the additional restriction.
Yes, sir. Okay, but let's have a procedural question for Mr. Fish. So process question. Is there any, without the existence of the enterprise zone now, is there any mechanism for this company to apply after the enterprise zone?
Karen Hill, Senator Cluster, members of the conference committee. No, they've applied for pre-certification or denied without this bill to essentially say that you know, they can be approved for their exemption in the future, kind of going back before determination, no. Or since they have to go to their enterprise zone that might exist, and as far as I know, they can't pick up, building.
That's true. Step one of Section 20 says business terms that operates or applies for pre-certification on or after the effective date of the tax. With the assumption that on the effective date of the tax, there is a zone in the gray area.
I'm Chairman Hill, Senator Corcoran, members of the conference committee, having a little bit of a disadvantage, right? I've not seen the C-20.
Well, you're expected to know because you work for the agency. But I do pop quizzes here all the time, aren't
you? Sure, I can help you do this. We just got it back to the previous before the album comes.
Well, I'm just curious if it's even workable. That's my question. I guess my basic question is, okay, so do you see this amendment as even workable in terms of the current concept of the lack of an enterprise zone in the Astoria area and the anticipation that this bill would create this enterprise zone?
Yeah, I can answer your question, Mr. Corcoran. This language involved here is mainly concerned with establishing prospectively for future businesses after this act might take place in existing enterprise zones that would be healthcare facilities, and they don't use it in an enterprise zone that exists, of course, in terms of at least their initial application, and two, that zone would have to make a decision before the end of this year that that's something they want to contemplate, in addition to it being remote, rural, and everything else. But up above there, beginning on line 5, it says except as provided in Section 21. And Section 21 is the part of the existing bill that provides for the sort of way to help the Astoria situation. This would not work for that, but that's still otherwise provided in the bill.
Okay. And then if the community is altered, you know, they could just simply amend this for that in the future. And even if the health care study exemption, the anyone who applies to the answer is there.
Chairman Hill, members of the conference, it would limit it to anybody who was in an enterprise zone where the local government had chosen before the end of this year to allow them in the future. It could go on, it could be for years in the future. Business operation permit is approved for certification after notification to the state that the sponsor desires to exempt healthcare facilities under the section, and that the resolution for that has to be in before the end of this year. There might be some, there's 37 zones, I don't know, maybe 30 of them are remote rural enough for this to even apply. Let's say maybe half of them decide they want to be healthcare inducing, and the other half decide not to. It's still, I think, the famous hotel-motel option where some of the zones have chosen to do it and some have not, and it's basically set for and forth.
Other questions?
Senator Gordon?
Aye.
Senator
Davis?
No.
Senator Gordon?
Aye.
Senator Manning?
Aye.
Senator Gilman?
Yes.
Senator Gilman?
Yes.
We wish to adopt the last 20 minutes, and 3 minutes, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon,
Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gordon, Senator Gord
on the cassette. I'm not sure whether you have any kind of amendment to that, but I suppose that the new journal enemy sometime or then should be able to know it.
I have a representative from my city out there that I would like to hear from on the main bill. The defense of the amendment. How do you have it?
There's still one here that I know of regarding the vaccine and the national education. They are written, one is not passed yet, and one of the other ones written to amend to be in for a
one of my concerns. Because I, you know, I'm here also representing the White House. I want to make sure that those issues also get on the record, so we can take time to do that. I don't know. That's what I'm trying to explore here. Okay, and the person I'm representing from the city of Portland is Marge Kapoor. Is the map in the room?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rose Coleman, the Economic Development Department. After this bill left the Senate committee, there was still some lingering concern about the provisions in the bill that had to do with the distribution of the 30% tax returns under the 15-year public income tax exemption. And therefore, the special districts, the cities, and the counties got together with the department and talked over the issue to see what needed was reasonable in terms of public policy. And the parties agreed that it would probably be better if we tried to amend the bill further to allow the distribution to take place, first of all, up to the amount of property taxes that might have been lost with the investment to the special districts, and then any further distribution above that to go to the sponsors, the zone sponsors who may be the city or the county. You have the city and the special districts here to talk to those issues if you would like to hear any further comments.
That was making his hands look like. I thank you very much for your
response. Mr. Hill, I'm members of the committee. I'm Linda McNamara from Linda Morgan City. As Doris said, we had had some concerns that Judge Treadwell was in the Senate and came to a resolution with the special districts and the counties to basically cap the amount that would be distributed to the taxing districts that lost property tax, doesn't mean the amount that they lost. Is nodding. That was the intent, and we're all happy and urging about the dash 17. If I may, one issue that was raised by the representative of the Department of Revenue in the back of the room was that there's a reference in the amendment to taxable assessed value on line 4 of the dash 17 amendment, and given the way that taxes are actually calculated, the reference should be to real market value, because that is what the assessors keep track of, as opposed to taxable assessed value. And so, together, there's another place in the bill that it is referenced that it would be helpful to have change.
Okay.
Sharon, members of the conference committee, I'm Marge Kapoor, representing the city of Portland. I think the Senator from Northeast Portland is asking the city's opinion on just a small aspect of the bill. While we do support the major bill, and it's important to our Portland Development Commission and also to OEDD. And all regions of the state, we have a specific and very narrow interest, which is in Section 5, Subsection 7 of the bill. As far as I know, it has been non-controversial and it's not a subject to this particular category. Mr. Chairman, the committee for the rest of the Special Business Association of Oregon concur with what my colleague has said about the E-17 amendments when we did the amendment in House Revenue Committee. The intent was not to give it the potential for a huge windfall to districts, so they would gain excess money. We just wanted the distribution to be allocated on the basis of the amount of property tax revenue that was lost on some of this, and then clear that up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Susan Morgan, State Rep for District 46, and the bulk of my district is Southern Douglas County, which is the area where one of the investments on behalf of Roser Forest Products will take place. If we can amend and move the bill with the what's marked on the top as the C-22 amendment. And when I finish my introduction here, I'll turn this table over with the chair's kind permission to a group of people from Roser Forest Products. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the impact that passing this bill through is going to have on my district. Representative Nesheri wanted to be here with me today because this bill also impacts his district, and our districts are quite alike in a number of ways. Douglas County right now has an unemployment rate, the last one I checked, of 11%, which is a far cry from what the top end of the Willamette Valley enjoys. And the economic realities in the district, in my district of Southern Oregon, is quite different than it is up here. The amendments to this bill will allow investments on behalf of Roser Forest Products that will bring 150 family wage jobs to my district. These are jobs that will average about $35,000 a year, which probably isn't that big of a deal by Portland standards, but by Douglas County standards, it's a big deal, and it will bring stability and security to 150 families in my district. This is an important bill, and I would ask you to find a way through Senator Lynn's situation and bring this bill to the floor. This is a critically important bill in terms of economic development in rural Oregon, and it's a critically important bill in terms of stability and security for families. And with that and the chair's indulgence, I will turn it over to Rosa Forza.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jack McIsaac. I represent Roseburg Forest Products, and with me, and my immediate right, is Alan Ford, Chairman of Roseburg Forest Products, and Scott Nelson, here, the CFO of the company. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Nelson, who I think will make, or Alan will make the presentation, and we can take it from there.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Lennon Hale, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alan Ford, President of Roseburg Forest Products. My father founded the company in 1936 as a sawmill business, and since that time, has grown to be a national leader in the wood products manufacturing industry. Over the years, my company has invested heavily in Oregon, with numerous mills, private plants, a particulate plant, and whole log chippers. Today, Roseburg employs approximately 3,400 Oregonians and continues to be headquartered in Roseburg. As part of a campaign to bring high-paying jobs to economically depressed areas of the state, the 1997 legislature adopted long-term rural enterprise zone legislation. That legislation provides corporate income tax credits and a long-term property tax exemption to companies that make a substantial investment in rural areas with chronic unemployment. A company is eligible for tax incentives if it invests over $50 million in new plant equipment and commits to hiring at least 100 full-time employees at above-average wages. Roseburg Forest Park plans to invest at least $60 million in a laminated veneer lumber plant in the Myrtle Creek, Little Area of South Douglas County, one of the most economically depressed areas of Oregon. That plant will create 125 to 150 new jobs at an average wage that is over 150% of the county's average wage. Roseburg selected this site after considering locations around the state and in California. The Economic Development Department introduced House Bill 2248 to clarify the 1997 law. Among other things, House Bill 2248 provides a method for determining the portion of the company's tax liability that the credit can be used to offset. The 1997 law says that the credits may be used to offset taxes relating to the new plant. However, the 1997 law does not specify a method to determine what portions of a company's overall tax payments relate to the new plant. In Section 14 of House Bill 2248, the Department has prepared a method for determining which taxes relate to a new plant. Unfortunately, this method works well for some companies, but not for others. This method works well for companies just entering the state, with no other operations in Oregon. However, this method does not work for an established Oregon-based company such as Roseburg, which has made numerous high-value investments throughout the state. Under this method, the value of Roseburg's investments in the new plant would be diluted to the point that Roseburg would realize little or no benefit from the tax base. This is not what the legislature intended in 1997. Today's proposed amendment changes the method for determining the portion of a company's tax payments that relates to the new plant. Under the amendment, a company will use the income data that it ordinarily maintains for determining the income of a new plant. Those data will have to either be prepared under generally accepted accounting rules or be the same data contained in financial reports that the company already would prepare to provide to lenders. If the company does not maintain those data under GAAP or provide them to lenders, then the company will follow a method similar to the method originally put out in the department's bill. The only difference will be that the company will use the book value net of depreciation to compare the value of its assets in the new plant to the value of its other assets in the state. This change means that the company can count its assets and other plants in Oregon at their depreciated values instead of at their original cost. Overall, the amendment will help to level the playing field, I'll emphasize that, between the locally based companies such as Roseburg, with investments in multiple plants in the state over a number of years, and those companies entering the state for the first time. The amendment will have no effect on companies that bring major investments to the state for the first time. The amendment will make the 1997 long-term rural enterprise zone provisions work as they were intended to. The amendment will encourage Oregon-based companies such as Roseburg to continue to make major investments in Oregon, such as the $60 million laminated veneer lumber plant we're discussing in South Douglas County. The amendment will help our homegrown companies to create high-paying jobs in Oregon rather than elsewhere. The Economic Development Department supports this amendment, and Roseburg urges you to support it also. We urge you to pass this amendment to House Bill 2248 to the floor of both the House and the Senate with a due pass recommendation. I'll be happy to answer any questions. I'll have to my wife, Scott Nelson, who is our corporate treasurer, and maybe can deal, if you want to get into the water's kind of details, Scott can answer your questions.
Mr. Ford, what's the possibility of putting some of this expansion in North Douglas County? And sometimes really needed all the money down there in County down south there. We need a little bit more, just south of you, a little bit north than that was.
Sherman Hill, Senator Cochran, hang on, being lobbied. Obviously, we're trying to position ourselves where we can best, work to the manufacturing office. And frankly, the I-5 corridor in southwestern Oregon, and we also consider Northern California, but the location and frankly, the enterprise loan was a very, very element in our making decision at this time and the location.
Thank you, Chair. And here's the question for the CFO. Do we have a dollar figure or a ballpark dollar figure what this would mean for 3 years for binding for the state?
Oregon-based companies such as Roseburg, which has made numerous high-value investments throughout the state. Under this method, the value of Roseburg's investments in the new plant would be diluted to the point that Roseburg would realize little or no benefit from the tax credit. This is not what the legislature intended in 1997. Today's proposed amendment changes the method for determining the portion of a company's tax payments that relates to the new plant. Under the amendment, a company will use the income data that it ordinarily maintains for determining the income of a new plant. Those data will have to either be prepared under generally accepted accounting rules or be the same data contained in financial reports that the company already would prepare to provide to lenders. If the company does not maintain those data under GAAP or provide them to lenders, then the company will follow a method similar to the method originally put out in the department's bill. The only difference will be that the company will use the book value net of depreciation to compare the value of its assets in the new plant to the value of its other assets in the state. This change means that a company can count its assets and other plants in Oregon at their depreciated values instead of at their original cost. Overall, the amendment will help to level the playing field, I'll emphasize that, between the locally based companies such as Roseburg, with investments in multiple plants in the state over a number of years, and those companies entering the state for the first time. The amendment will have no effect on companies that bring major investments to the state for the first time. The amendment will make the 1997 long-term rural enterprise zone provisions work as they were intended to. The amendment will encourage Oregon-based companies such as Roseburg to continue to make major investments in Oregon, such as the $60 million laminated veneer lumber plant that we're discussing in South Douglas County. The amendment will help our homegrown companies to create high-paying jobs in Oregon rather than elsewhere. The Economic Development Department supports this amendment, and Roseburg urges you to support it also. We urge you to pass this amendment to House Bill 2248 to the floor of both the House and the Senate with a due pass recommendation. I'll be happy to answer any questions. I'll have my wife, Scott Nelson, who is our corporate treasurer, and maybe can deal, if you want to get into the water's county details, Scott can answer your question.
Okay, Mr. Ford, what's the possibility of putting some of this expansion in North Douglas County? And really needed all the money down there and down south there. We need a little bit more, just south of you, a little bit north of the road.
Sherman Hill, Senator Cochran, hang on, been lobbying. Obviously, we're trying to position ourselves where we can best, work through this manufacturing operation. Frankly, the I-5 corridor in southwestern Oregon, and we also consider Northern California, but the location and frankly, the enterprise loan was a very, very key element in our making decision at this time and the location.
Mr. Chair, maybe this is a question for the CFO, but do we have a dollar figure, a ballpark dollar figure, what this would mean 2 years from buying for the state?
We expect that the Chairman Hill, Representative Decker, let me do a comment to me. We expect that the facility will start operations somewhere around January 2001, likely for the 1 to 2 year period. After that startup date, that the income level of that facility will be nominal and therefore the credit would be nominal. After that time period, we would expect that the credit would be somewhere potentially as high as $600,000 to $900,000. $600,000 to $900,000.
Per biennium?
No, that would be annually.
Annually. So, I understand. Sure, I didn't follow up. So, the competition is just for this one facility. The estimate would be per year, and we might be talking 5 years down the road to get ramped up, but per year, 5 years down the road, ballpark is about $750,000 to $800,000 in terms of the credit from the state.
Chairman Harrell, Representative Becker, yes, that's generally true. I would expect after the facility is ramped up, and if this amendment was passed, the credit could potentially be as high as $600,000 to $900,000.
Thank you. It's a little bit forward or has this been discussed with the United Health Department or are they okay on the amendments? Have they seen the amendments? The record showing the shaking said yes, Mr. Chairman, so I didn't test the line of questions.
Yes, we did look at the amendments, and we also shared those with the Department of Revenue to be sure that they would agree that this was workable and that it would be consistent with what we've done before.
And for sure, the Department of Revenue has
George, you can nod your head and I'll get it on the record. Just for my own application, this is very consistent with other enterprise zone activity that we have endeavored in, and from the department's perspective, meets all the criteria that we have done previously.
We were concerned about making sure that it was possible to administer it in a way that would be acceptable to the sponsors and to the Department of Revenue. So that's why we ran this by them as well. And it is consistent. We're satisfied that the amendment is correct in terms of what they need.
I'm prepared to take a motion on the G22 conceptual amendment we had before. At this point, the question is, the AED hard down on legislative council now.
I just want to fill, and thank you, Mr. Worker, for the time to come out here today to be with us. You stated how many full-time employees would be at this facility, and if the wages would be paid above average in terms of comparable employment in federal counties?
Yes, from Hill and Lipton Decker to Rodden, we're talking about 125 to 150. We're actually talking two phases in the plant. We'll start at one level, and we hope the success of the project will expand it past this point. The wages we're talking about are anywhere from $35,000 to $40,000 a year, I think, as somebody else spoke to. If you translate that back to an hourly wage or a base wage, it's around $13, $14 an hour with benefits probably $15, $20. And in our area, that's substantially above what you would consider to be an average wage level. Did I answer your question?
You did. Thank you.
I just want to make it clear that there's never been a tax credit like this in enterprise before, so it is new, but the company tax credit has to be approved by the governor, and to be eligible for this whole thing, there has to be local approval of the project, and the various criteria that are in the bill that you reviewed have to be met. And the apportionment is really a very technical issue. We struggled with it in terms of making it to a facility in state during the interim, and in this we developed a legal clarification, which was based on the interstate portion of the minimum state. But clearly, what you're hearing here is an excellent opportunity to make it a much more powerful tool for in state companies to provide a fair basis in which to judge their income for purposes of the credit. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
We have checked what you said, and we will come back again. You can keep on
Mr. Chairman, I understand the sense of the committee is that that's an LC on this document characterized as the C-22, and also to get amendments to the C-17 and as a regulated city at a technical fix. I'm going to do both of those. Would you like me to combine them into a single bill then? If there's a possibility to adopt them, that would be the fastest way to do it.
My statement is really for the good of the order.
I am personally pleased that we were able to get to this point in our discussion of the bill and the various amendments this afternoon, and going back to the proposals that Senator Rem put before us, I sincerely hope that we find a way, and I'll just say it's not in this particular conference committee, I hope that we are able to find a way working with the Oregon Economic Development Department to make that opportunity work on the ground in Astoria. Again, I'm concerned about the health care, the access to health care issue. And so my question is, how do we address that? What are some things that we can do proactively to make that work with our community? And if this isn't the vehicle, then we're real bright people here. We ought to be able to come up with something that does work.
I don't think anybody up here in the Senate knows how I feel about health care. Taking this as a health care issue as far as our position on the issue. No, I don't. And I'm sure my friend here from the Beaverton area isn't either. But that's not the issue. It's not health care. I couldn't agree with you more. We need it in rural Oregon more so now than ever. But rural Oregon getting picked on this session. So, you know, someone's got to holler once in a while. This just doesn't have to be the area I want to holler in. So I guess that's one thing.
When
you find that area, you do let us know. Good to tell both here, I can tell you that. Okay. With that, then, we are...